right, three more to go. It's the Raptors show. It's Blake Murphy and Matt Bonner. Matt, for the first time this season, in a flannel on the show.
Collared shirt. Mic's off.
Collared shirt.
Yeah.
Yep, I had a speaking thing at the Crescent School, speaker series.
Did they reward you for your part, the part you played in them winning the, I think it was U14 championship?
You know what? They didn't. I was expecting a championship ring from them, honorary one. It didn't have to be the full-blown one that the players get. You know, I could have taken the support staff one, but I didn't get anything. But, no, it was great. We, talking about character, leadership through sport, I focused, one of my focuses was overcoming adversity and had a PowerPoint presentation with video.
Wow.
Telling the tale of our heartbreaking defeat in 2013 with the Ray Allen shot. And then coming back the next year and destroying the Heat in the finals. Getting our revenge.
Destroying the Heat in the finals.
Breaking the team up. LeBron leaving for the Cavs.
You're welcome, Cleveland.
Yeah, that's right. So, yeah, it was fun. And that is why I'm in a collared shirt. It just didn't feel right to wear a homage, Tribe Called Quest Raptors shirt for that presentation.
Yeah, I was going to say the kids would have appreciated it.
Beautiful school, by the way.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever been
there. Anyways, I have something for you.
Oh, is it your championship ring?
No, it's not, which I brought out for the first time in years.
Nice.
That was also part of my message. Like, when I think, I don't think about the ring. The ring's cool.
Yeah.
I take it out once every 3 years. Like, it's about the process of getting there. That's what it's all about. That's what life's about. But yesterday, I was parked in a green pea, and someone parking their car or whatever took out my front passenger side bumper.
No, like that's a new car too.
Yep, scraped it all up, but had the decency to leave a note. So I'm not going to say the person's name just in case.
Do you want to provide their insurance number?
No, but I just, it's one of those things that made me have regained some faith in humanity because the person did not need to do that. I'm guessing there were no witnesses. They could have just scraped up my bumper and kept it moving.
Yeah.
But they did the right thing, left a note, and I thank them for that.
So I would do the right thing and leave a note anyway because I'm a good person. But in the back of my head, like in the current like technological world we live in, I would be so worried I would get caught on camera and then you're getting hit with a hit and run too. Like someone's security camera from their house or like...
Yeah, Greenpeace, like CC.
Someone sees you. Yeah,
like CC.
CCTV.
Yeah, I'm guessing Greenpeace have that. But I'm going to give the person the benefit of the doubt that they did it because they're a good person, not because of that, which would have been a pain because then I would have had to track down the video and do all that investigative work. It's still a pain. Now I have to go do an insurance claim and go to get it repaired and all that. But they did the right thing. That's the important thing here, I think.
That sucks. It's a new car, though. I had the first car I ever bought. I got hit while I was in a parking lot like the first week I had it. It was devastating. Like I had no money. I scrimped and saved to have like a beater car and then someone hit it the first week I had
Like I told the Crescent School this morning.
Adversity.
Adversity. It comes in many forms. Some are in your control, some aren't. It was out of my control. There's nothing I can do. I was parked there. Someone did it. It happens. Move forward.
Speaking of adversity, a lot of overcoming adversity in Toronto sports yesterday. We got our second Toronto treble in 11 days.
Woo!
Raptors, Leafs, Jays all win. Now, I wasn't entirely aware
of
this.
And the Spurs. We count them.
Yeah, we're gonna get to that in a sec. But I was at the curling last night.
Oh, yeah. How was that? Gushu lighting it up?
No. Terrible game. Allowed four in the second.
He won the first one, though, right?
Allowed four in the second end and just, like, couldn't claw his way back. And, like, I didn't realize quite the degree, by his standards, the slump he's in over the last couple months. So that was tough for me. I go out and I watch Gaju lose. But Team Holman.
Am I saying his name wrong?
So this is like John Cullen can fill you in on this on the weekend. But this is like a thing. Everyone has always said Gushu. And then when he says his own name in an interview, he'll say Gaju.
Bless you.
Yeah, exactly. And he says he doesn't care. But like, yeah, the way he pronounces it is Gaju.
From now on, I want to be called Bonaire.
Yeah. Are you sure about that? Do you want to rethink the way you just said that?
Why?
Anyway, so I was...
One of my nicknames growing up was the Fresh Prince of Bonaire.
Nice. That's a good one.
Yeah.
That's a good one. So I went to the curling with John Cullen, and we had the Leaf game up on a phone because the Leafs went to overtime, and it's a really big game for them winning the to try to lock up the division. And then I go home and I turn on the Raptors game, and I knew that they had won, but I didn't know the specifics. So I sit down, I watch, and I'm like, full disclosure, I'm like not the most excited to watch a Raptors Hornets game where nobody's playing.
And they won by 30.
Yeah, and so I had known that. And then I watched it. It was actually like a tremendously fun game. Like, as someone who is invested in Jared Roden, it was a fun game.
Ballin'.
As two of us who have been not critical, but like, hey, we need to see a little bit more out of Jonathan Mobo. Let's see more. Man, triple-double.
Triple-double. Four steals, too.
Yeah, and the, 17 points, 10 rebounds, 11 assists, three steals, yeah. And then the aggression. Like, the amount that they were giving him the ball to operate, first of all, grab a defensive rebound or a steal and push in transition, operate in semi-transition a little bit, you know, that high DHO stuff that Jakob always does. You know, looking comfortable and decisive in that. Really, that's the only big takeaway from the game, I think, is, you know, because it was a 30-point blowout of the Greensboro Swarm. No disrespect to Tijon Salon. I was really impressed with Mobo's just kind of how comfortable he was, how decisive he was operating from the top of the floor with a lot of those assists.
Sometimes it takes being put in a situation where you have no choice but to do that. Like, with the amount of guys sitting and what the game was, it was like, hey, we need you to be out there and be aggressive, facilitating the offense for yourself or a teammate. I've told the story, like, a lot, like, some players just have the mentality where they're just not wired to be aggressive for themselves. I feel like Mobo might have that mentality. I had it at Florida until Coach Donovan ran five plays in a row for me against Georgia. And told me I'm not allowed to pass. Wow. I don't care what you do, you have to get a shot up. And I scored all five times, and we came back and won.
Nice.
And from that point on, it was like a switch went off.
It's not always selfish to look for your shot.
Yeah, but you got to be like forced into it sometimes to prove to yourself what you're capable of. And you look at how Mobo's been playing these last few games. It's a kind of another silver lining of sitting guys. And even when you do play your good players, you're playing them limited minutes. He's out there forced into these situations where he can, like, prove to himself what he's potentially capable of.
Yeah, and I went back and logged the assists this morning, and they were coming by all different types of assists. You know, pushing in transition, defense sucks in, you kick it out to a shooter. Hey, easy DHO handoff. Hey, next time DHO keeper and you pick out a cutter. A couple different types of cuts that he picked out, you know, a lot of good, like, transition and semi-transition stuff where he's the first man with the ball and, like, hey, you're 6'8", 6'9", and running with the ball, you're going to draw two defenders and someone, the trailer or the cutter behind you or something like that, someone's going to be open. So, there were one or two where I think on his 11th one, he just kind of, like, swung it and Garrett took, like, a one dribble three.
Garrett Temple balling.
9 points. Did you see what he said after the game?
No.
He got asked about his future, about, like, some role in the organization. And I think you and I could have guessed what his answer would have been given our conversations with him. And he was like, I want to be back as a player. He came out and said it instead of just, like, you know, heavily hinting at it like he has with us. So Garrett Temple wants to be back.
Well, remember, he was saying, I'm going to stay and keep working out.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, in bad golf weather, no less. So he must be serious about it. Did you text him about your sandwiches, by the way?
Not yet.
Okay.
Not yet. I have that bullet in the chamber.
Yeah.
Just waiting to use it.
All right. Okay, so Mobo, triple-double is great. Really great crowd atmosphere last night. Was sad to miss the final home game of the season live, but it came across on TV very well as well, how good the crowd was. The bench absolutely losing their minds when Mobo got the triple-double marker was a lot of fun. A
couple Jameson Battle nasty dunks.
Yeah. Yeah, that was fun to see. The only other note I have from the Raptors game, and this might be a note that gets there might be an addendum to it on Saturday, but I can report the Raptors are going to waive Cole Swider today. He hit two threes last night. This is, I tweeted about this when they signed Cole Swider to another contract the other day, that they have enough room under the test. Cole Swider gets his money still, but they have enough room where they could do this. And then the reason they do it is come Saturday, they can then sign someone for that final game of the season, but tack on next year as well, whether that's a team option or a partial guarantee or something like that. So it could be Cole Swider. It could be AJ Lawson, who's on a two-way, if you want to reward him and give him a year for
Roden?
Next year. Roden's already under contract for next year.
Okay.
He's got a multi-year two-way.
He's looked great.
Yeah. So he's already. And then Colin Castleton's 10-day expires with the 76ers in time for he would be a potential option there as well. So a few different options there. But, yeah, expect to see the news later that Cole Swider will get waived. That's why. So they can sign someone to rest of this year and next.
Nice. We'll see what they do.
Nice to see Swider, whether he comes back or not, have a couple shots dropped these last couple games like we talked about with Garrett yesterday. Lots happened around the NBA last night. So let's talk to our pal Dan Devine of Yahoo, of the Big Number podcast, about it. Dan, how we doing, buddy?
Doing great. Thanks so much for having me back, guys.
Sweet yellow shirt.
Thank you. You know, I wore it because I figured it would really pop on camera and then it might pop the two of you. So that's why I'm thinking always about my hosts.
Is that a Branson-bound t-shirt from She's Out of Your League?
I have to admit, that's not what I was going for, but if that's what it evokes for you, I love that. I love that for you.
I don't know who got that reference, but...
I mean, I know the movie. I don't... Like the Jay Baruchel movie,
right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Remember they were on the plane, they were going to the family reunion in Branson, and they had yellow t-shirts that said Branson bound?
Oh, right. No, I don't remember
I'm going
that.
For CanCon, because I'm coming on north of the border, so I figured Baruchel content, everybody's going to love it.
Speaking of content, did you see the new MJ Lenderman video this morning for Wristwatch?
Did not.
I did. It hits the middle of the Venn diagram really, really nicely. Basketball and indie rock and jokes. Mwah.
Yeah.
What more can you ask for?
And to not give the whole thing away, but there's a great like visual comedy bit in it where he's driving a big truck and the back of the truck is just full of basketballs and he hits the overpass. It's too big for the overpass. And it like most of the video is just basketballs flying around, hitting cars and stuff like that. It's so silly. And I'm going to take it as like obviously a basketball thing, but a nod to Walking Contradiction from Green Day, which is one of the best music videos of all time. Check it out. You'll like it.
It's definitely his idea.
Oh, yeah.
He went to the label and was like, listen, here's what I'm thinking.
Truck full of basketballs. I crashed the car. They're all over the place.
Yeah, he's blowing up, so they had no choice but to say yes.
Yes.
It's like when the guy makes a huge movie, and then they can make anything they want, and they make an awful movie.
One for the studio, one for you.
Yeah, exactly.
This is... okay, you ready for this segue?
Ready.
Haven't seen someone drive a truck with basketballs that badly since Nico Harrison.
So we
can pivot there.
Mic drop.
Yeah. Dan, Luka's return to Dallas last night. I know you wrote about it heading into that one. Man, we got Fire Nico chants in the first quarter. We got Luka tearing up at the video. We got t-shirts. We got the whole Lakers bench doing the Luka chants. How much fun do you have watching that one? And man, I know you're like modestly understanding of the Mavericks, not pro trade, of course, but what a mess of a night if you are the Dallas Mavericks.
Well, yeah, I loved it because in watching the game and talking about it online, I'm saying things like, you know, it's kind of cool to see the Mavericks with their bigs in the lineup and you can kind of get the sense of what they were going for. And the response was, yeah, they also could have not traded Luka Doncic.
Yeah.
Yes, correct. That was also an option on the table. It's about as close to a storybook revenge return tour as you could ask for, right? Like the overwhelming love and affection and just, you know, adulation that I've never seen a returning player get cheered like that every time they touched the ball the whole night, standing ovation at the end of it after he put 45 on you and just absolutely destroyed you. It lays bare just how rare a set of circumstances this is, just how special a relationship it was between Luka, or remains between Luka and the city of Dallas, just how unbelievably large a problem the Mavericks have going forward in terms of trying to figure out how to move forward from this, and also just how big a deal it is that Luka Doncic is on the Los Angeles Lakers, because the puncher's chance they didn't have maybe before the trade deadline, they certainly have it now.
And made it worse.
It looks a lot. Yeah, it looks a lot like Luka Doncic.
Made it worse.
Yeah.
Like, it would have been great if he was like 4 for 23.
This is how rare the circumstances are. Luka is now only the second player in the history of the NBA to score 45 points for a team and then score 45 points against the same team in the same season. Wilt Chamberlain, 1964-65, with San Francisco and Philadelphia, is the only other player to drop 45 for and against the team in the same year ever.
Yeah, but he probably averaged 45 that year.
He averaged 34.7.
Yeah, exactly.
Fifth in MVP voting that year. Although that's not far off what Luka's averaging. What's he got? 28. Okay, so 34 and 28.
Generally speaking, though, anytime you're in the same conversation where it's you and Wilt Chamberlain, you've done something right. And Luka Doncic continues to do that with the Los Angeles Lakers.
Yeah, Luka's doing it. And then Shea with his 72-game streak of 20-plus that I think only MJ, Oscar Robertson, and Wilt have done. Anytime Wilt is evoked, like you said, Dan, you're in good shape. Okay, so the Lakers side of that one, obviously, look, a lot of that night was about Luka specifically and Luka's relationship with Dallas, but that is a Lakers team that has looked very good since the trade in general. Shocker, getting Luka Doncic, it really helps your team. And it's at a time where the West has kind of really become, whether because of coach firings or injuries or whatever, it's OKC up here, and then there's a mess of teams in the 2-8 range. I don't mean that qualitatively, like seeding-wise, all those teams are really tight as well. Where would your confidence level be in this Lakers squad heading into the playoffs, where, again, it does look like kind of OKC and everyone else?
I think it's obviously, it's a cop-out answer, but so much of it is matchup dependent. But I think the fact that you're able to look at this Lakers roster and say, I mean, if they go up, if they were had to deal with Jokic over the course of a full series, the size imbalance on this roster where you're playing Jackson Hayes at the five and then kind of going small almost the entire rest of the time with Dorian Finney-Smith or Jared Vanderbilt or even LeBron at the five and just wings kind of everywhere. It's maybe, I mean, it'd be very fascinating from a styles make fights perspective, kind of who gets to dictate the direction of the play. But pretty much every other matchup that you're dealing with, yeah, Oklahoma City's huge. The Lakers are looking at it and saying, we have two guys who can make you wrong on basically every possession, who can diagnose what you're trying to do against us defensively in real time and break it by, you know, the end of the first quarter. We have two guys capable of doing that. Also, Austin Reeves is our third guy, and he would be a second guy or maybe even a low-end first guy on a lot of other teams. So the firepower is there. The versatility, the switchability of the bigs that they've got. Nobody huge, but there's a lot of guys who can do a lot of different things. I think you've seen the impact that Jared Vanderbilt can make as an energy and offensive rebounder. You know, somebody you can throw defensively, even on guards. He's able to handle a lot of different responsibilities. They've got a lot of ways to make you wrong. And in a seven-game series, that can go a long way, even if there's, you know, a large imbalance in the standings. I wouldn't want to see any of the Lakers if I was any of those teams up in the upper part of the bracket in a round two matchup. The funny thing is, because as you mentioned, there's that mess of seedings to also figure out. We don't know who the Lakers would be dealing with. They're likely going to be three. We don't know who six is. We could absolutely wind up having a replay of that Lakers-Warriors game from the other night in the first round. And I don't know that the Lakers necessarily want to see the Warriors in a first round series. So still a ton to be determined. But I think the ceiling for this Lakers team is awfully high. And the times where they scrape it, you're like, man, that can be pretty special come the springtime.
And Houston, there's just a lot of teams nobody wants to see.
Like. And Houston's locked right in as the two seed. And it's like, hey, you've done all this work all season. Here's your reward. Potentially the Warriors in round one coming out of the play-in. Right. Because again, the Lakers are the three seed. There are only 2.5 games separating three seed and eight seed right now. So six teams, the Lakers are at least assured of not falling to the play-in, but everyone else is jockeying around there. Like Minnesota, Golden State, Memphis, the Clippers, and the Nuggets could all potentially be the team that you draw if you're Houston as a reward for getting the two seed. Like that is a tough reward.
Yeah, Houston has to be the most annoying team to play against, right?
I would think so.
Oh my goodness. Even with all that physicality, yeah, the size everywhere. And the fact, and it's the way they win too. It's they win by beating the brakes off you. Like you can never fall asleep on a box out. You can never be a little bit lazy with your dribble as you're coming across half court. You can never lollipop a pass. Like all of the, you have to be buttoned up and nailed down in every capacity because the possession battle is how they win games. You know, obviously the Raptors fans up there know very well how that can work. If you got a team that can tilt with turnovers or tilt with offensive rebounds, expand your opportunity to take more shots. It's also one reason why I think, and you know, he's not going to be at the top of a whole lot of other marquees, but fun time to talk, or fun person to talk about with you guys. It's why Fred VanVleet is one of the most important players in the entire Western Conference playoff bracket, because when he's on the floor, their turnover number is very low. They are able to take care of the ball, get good possessions. And when he's off the floor, it rises considerably. And that's how they have to win. They've got to win by taking care of the ball, making sure they get more shots than you, because they don't have great outside shooting. They don't have a ton of perimeter talent in terms of like that one apex predator wing that's going to be able to dominate possession by possession. It's, you know, Şengün being able to sort of elbows and in, nudge his way into an angle no one else can access and get a shot up. Or it's VanVleet making sure you get something at the end of the clock. That's a lot of the answer there. Jalen Green obviously is having his springtime resurgence, which we've seen pretty much every year. But VanVleet to me is going to be the bellwether for them. And if he's able to play big minutes and being able to make an impact with the way he can control the game, much as he did for years in Toronto, that's going to raise the ceiling for the Rockets considerably. I mean, they've already a high floor with the way they defend and then the way that they can tilt the game with their athleticism. But in the playoffs, a lot of the transition stuff goes away. A lot of the offensive rebounds rebounding can be tough to come by. You need good possessions. You need to take care of the ball, and that's Fred VanVleet for them.
It's weird how similar their identity is to the University of Houston.
Yeah.
They play the exact same way.
Yeah, it's just that area of Texas, I guess.
Yeah.
It's yeah.
So if preparing, just look at the Gators game plan, I guess.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, stop.
I had to get a Gators reference in there somewhere.
If there's an NBA playoff,
I respect the shoehorning. Very nice.
Yeah, if there's an NBA playoff team, you could convince me won't get a shot off in their final two possessions of a clutch game.
That's what I'm saying.
It's probably the Rockets, but yeah.
But they're going to crash the glass, everything you said.
Yeah.
That's the most annoying stuff to have to play against.
Yeah, and VanVleet's having such a interesting season too, where I know he missed a chunk of time with the ankle. He's got a huge team option coming up this year. His shooting numbers are in the tank. Like when he was here, people would get mad at the shooting numbers because the field goal percentage wasn't great and stuff, but he would hit a lot of threes. It's like, oh, if you're a 6 foot guard and most of your shots are threes, we can't use traditional field goal percentage. But even like his true shooting percentage this year is in the tank. I gotta pull the number. It's got to be like the best season ever in terms of like impact metrics, like your on off impact for a guy with like a true shooting percentage of 51. It's because he's like sub 40 on from the floor, sub 35 on threes, but still, like, we saw it when the Rockets were out, they started losing a bunch of games, and the second he came back they started winning a bunch of games. It's not as simple as that all the time, but it's pretty straightforward with how that Rockets team operates, I think.
Yeah, it's nice when it works out that way, but I mean the main attraction is going to be just like, hey, Amen Thompson, go have fun, go roam free. Everybody's going to get a chance. Those who haven't been able to see it throughout the course of the regular season, or who haven't maybe been locked in on Houston games on League Pass, you're going to get a good look at one of sort of what the future looks like this with the way Amen Thompson impacts the game all over the floor. And you're going to think that maybe he's playing it like you're fast forwarding, or you have it at 2x. Nope, that's just the way that guy moves. It's pretty remarkable.
Also, get your shares early for Tari Eason, Most Improved Player 2025-2026.
I love that. I love that pick.
Yeah, the in-season improvement this year has been noticeable, and he's only played, you know, he missed a bunch of time injured too. I think he'll be a guy that, like, start of next year, everyone's like, oh, like maybe the, you know, where Jalen Johnson was, you know, a year ago prior to the shoulder injury or whatever. I think he'll have a nice little breakout.
Last thing on Houston, they got the alt court that says H-Town on it. And every time I see that, it just makes me think of the 90s R&B group H-Town.
I'm not familiar.
Oh,
I thought it was O-Town.
No. There's a group called H-Town who has
Matt Bonner. Thank you for putting me on.
Am I allowed to say the name of their famous song? Can you say that on
I got to look up what the song is because I don't.
Knockin' the Boots.
You can say Knockin' the Boots.
It's a great song.
It's a term where, like, if you know that term, you're old and aren't going to be offended by it. If you don't know the term, you don't know the term.
Yeah, they're kind of a one-hit wonder, but it was a really popular song in the 90s, and you know, I wonder if their downloads are up from the free marketing of H-Town.
Man, what a great album name, too. Fever for the Flavor. Man, that's I was not familiar with H-Town.
I had the CD.
I was not familiar with Matt.
Said one more thing on Houston, you could have said, I bet you $7 billion you won't guess what the next thing out of his mouth is. You would have been right. I could have given me a million chances, a million wishes. No idea.
Yeah, perfect. I'm thinking, does he have something on Ime?
You're old enough. You should remember
Is he a huge Jayshon Tate fan? No, it's H-Town the band. No, they were like 1991. I was a toddler.
Oh, maybe that's how you were made.
No, I'm older than that. Yeah, probably for me, it was probably like early Bon Jovi or something like that. That's the Cambridge. My dad had like long hair and a mustache. It's
old man Murphy rocking H-Town.
Yeah, Big Ed. Yeah, he was not a. He's not a H-Town guy. Okay. It would have been some bad
in Newfoundland,
dad rock.
H-Town was huge in Newfoundland.
Yeah, yeah. All right, let's pivot elsewhere in the Western Conference before we let you go here, Dan. What do you want to do? You want to do Warriors or you want to talk playoff Kawhi?
Let's do playoff Kawhi.
Yes.
Because I think, Canada. But also, I think I understand there's a boy who cried wolf component to this, right? Like, you look at when he's playing well, when he's playing healthy, when he's having a good stretch, and everyone's like, yeah, but let's wait a little while and see what I get it. But the whole premise of the Raptors of the of the Clippers season this season has been like, build an infrastructure that keeps us afloat without him, and then when we get him, we got a chance against anybody. And so they've been a top two, top three defense all year. The offense has been mostly bad, but Harden keeping them afloat enough, Norm Powell keeping them afloat enough. And so then Ivica Zubac on both ends of the floor having like a one of the better seasons very few people talk about in terms of just the anchor he is for them on the defensive end and the pick and roll, roll man hub, the offensive rebounding, everything that he's been able to do on the offensive end. They stay afloat. They stay in that top five, top six mix. And then Kawhi's actually healthy. And you watch it. It took him a little while, but then he hit the gas. And it's like he's not only just playing, he's playing 35, 36, 38. He's playing real minutes, big usage, and the numbers and the production and the way it looks where you're like, that is the robotic, you know, the absolute pinnacle of what that form needs to look like. No wasted movement, completely ease moving around the court. And you see it all at the same time and you're like, okay, that guy can get his shot off against anybody. That guy can be the best player on the floor in any series he's in. Their defense travels. Ty Lue is a championship caliber coach with a proven track record. They're deep. They're versatile. They can play all these wings. They can play big. They can play small. Like, why not? And the best answer anybody can come up with is because he's probably going to get hurt in a week and a half. Okay, totally.
Good luck game planning for that. It's like, oh, well, how do we stop the Clippers? Well, we just cross our fingers. It's crazy. You mentioned the numbers. So 18 games since he came back and got the thumbs up to play like big minutes every game instead of doing the 28, 29. So probably the most important stat is he's averaging 35 minutes a game over those 18. And come playoff time, you could probably nudge
to me,
that
that's too many if I'm them. I want to keep it up.
But he hasn't played any back-to-backs at least.
Okay.
So they're at least monitoring.
Because it's like
the same
strategy the Raptors used in 19, coming off that injury.
Right, yeah, he sat 22 games.
Let's have the infrastructure in place so that when he's full strength every game in the playoffs, we can go make a run at it.
17 and 5 in the games he didn't play. I remember that stat very clearly. But in those 18 games, so no back-to-backs, but he's been able to ratchet the minutes up to 35. 25-7-3 on almost 50-40-90 shooting.
That's sounds like Kawhi Leonard, you know, and when you look at him, that's the thing, watching him move around the court, there have been times where it's like, it's too mechanical. It seems like it's rickety. He doesn't seem like he trusts it. Doesn't look like that now. It looks like the way Kawhi Leonard's supposed to look. Like when you close your eyes and you imagine the best versions of Kawhi Leonard, maybe it'll never be quite what it was back in San Antonio before the Zaza play. But when you think about what he's looked like at his best, at his healthiest, the last handful of years, it looks like this. And if that's true, and that defense is there, and that supporting cast is there, again, we just keep racking up teams you don't want to have to deal with. But I think the Clippers are going to be at the very top of a lot of teams' lists because the physicality, the versatility, and that top-end talent, they check every box you'd need.
Yeah, and normally you'd think, like, he's almost 34 with an injury history, like, man, how is he possibly going to look like we've seen him look? The answer is he hasn't played much.
Yeah.
Like his whole career, he hasn't really played a lot, so he doesn't have the same mileage, even within this season. Remember when the Warriors won it and, like, Steph got hurt kind of towards the end of the year but came back in time to, like, get back into rhythm for the playoffs?
Yeah,
yeah.
Like, it's such a grind. When you get in your 30s, like, it's almost a blessing in disguise if you miss a couple months.
This is how I feel about Jimmy Butler on the Warriors. It's like Jimmy actually sitting a good chunk of the middle of the season, given his age and the workload he's going to carry in the playoffs. It's probably a good thing. As long as they avoid the play-in here, and even then, I think they'd be a heavy favorite to get out of the play-in. Yeah.
I played like 20 minutes a game, and when I was 34, I was like, oh, geez. I can't imagine these guys that played 35.
Yeah.
Like,
And I mean, the load Kawhi carries. Dan, last one before
I didn't carry a load in my 20 minutes,
Blake?
Well,
not a Kawhi-level load. That's all.
It ISO'd me every other time. No, I'm joking.
But Kawhi didn't have
I stood in the corner.
Kawhi didn't have the leadership and camaraderie component to carry that you did.
I was up off that bench so many times.
I believe you. I remember watching.
That's like 1,000 squats a night, just getting up off that bench cheering, clapping. Yeah.
There you go.
Big vibes
easy?
Require
you
broad shoulders.
A night you're getting a DNP, you're like, no chair. I'm going to wall sit the whole time.
Some Shaquille O'Neal icy hot so I can clap harder.
Yeah. Dan, I have nothing for you on this other than it's a silly way to say goodbye. Found out yesterday Nick Young coaches in the Big Three. Can you think of a funnier head coach?
See, the, what I want, because my obviously your first thought is that that is total goofball business, and obviously it will be extremely silly. What if it's not? What if he's like Riley in 87, and it's like, I am buttoned up, it's Armani, it's serious, it's punching through walls because you're furious, someone missed a rotation. What if this is what it takes to unlock? It's not Swaggy P anymore. It's like, I am Nick Young, serious basketball coach. That would be the zag that I think would make my summer. I wouldn't hold my breath for it, but, you know, listen, hope springs eternal in the big three.
Yeah, from no tattoos on the right arm, it's strictly for buckets, to now I'm going to draw plays up, tattoo our ATOs up on my arm. Dan, thanks so much for doing this, man. Enjoy the playoffs, buddy.
My pleasure, guys. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks, Dan.
Dan Devine, Yahoo Sports, the Big Number podcast with Tom Haberstroh, who we had on the other week, who had a great piece on Nikola Jokic and what his future looks like in Denver as well. Let's take a break. Talk to our pal Sirit Sohi on the other side as the Wrap the Show continues with Blake Murphy and Matt Bonner.
Big opinions and in-depth conversations covering the Leafs, Jays, Raptors, and the NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Raptor Show. Some sad news during the break. Turns out I can't say knock into boots. I've been fired for referencing 1990s R&B on the air. Oh, no.
They got the FCC up here. What is it?
Yeah, I don't know. It's something
whatever
like that.
Whatever that is.
Yeah, it exists. Yeah. Mostly they're trying to make sure we play enough Canadian music. So we just have to find, we have to play 30% Canadian R&B when we're getting into R&B. We'll have to go.
We'll have to reference more Canadian music.
Yes, absolutely. We certainly don't talk about Pup enough. On the show, we got okay. So here we go. We mentioned Pop. We talked about MJ Lenderman earlier and H-Town. That's 1/3 of the musicians we've talked about today are Canadian. So we're
tragically good. Hip stars, Metro.
Yeah.
Boom.
Speaking
keep
of Canadians, let's tag in our pal Sirit Sohi of the Ringer WNBA show. She joins us now. Sirit, how are we doing?
I'm good. I'm happy to hear that you guys are like just totally meeting your quotas and actually just smashing past them.
Yeah, we're cruising.
It's in our contracts. The fine print. That's why you always read the fine print.
You got to read the fine print, yeah.
Sirit, you are fresh off the women's Final Four. Before we get into the specifics of that, how was the experience? You were there covering, I imagine it was a ton of fun, and you got some unbelievable games and stories to cover.
It was a lot of fun, you know. It was my first Final Four ever, men's or women's, so that was cool. Tampa was a great host city, which, you know, I feel like every time I mention that, I feel like I'm way too media pilled at this point. I've been doing this job too long, I noticed. I'm like, oh yeah, like, oh, these guys did a great job. But really, it was a lot of fun, and it was sold out, and I just loved being in the atmosphere. It was really cool, especially Paige Mania, you know, like all the signs that little girls were making, and also to see all these different age groups of people, especially with like a fan base like UConn. They've been fans for so long, so you see, like, you know, your grandma's in pixie cuts, but you also see, you know, a growing fan base as well, because it feels like she's just taking TikTok over.
As far as the crowd down there, what was the percentages per school, like in the stands?
You know, that was really interesting. It felt pretty, when I was out in the crowd, it felt pretty evenly split. But then once the game started, it was clear that UConn and South Carolina, because of their, you know, their history, both kind of dynastic franchises, they definitely had the edge fan-wise, but you didn't really notice. It's a good question, because it was one of the things that was encouraging as far as, you know, you hope for the game to grow, that it felt like there were a ton of Texas fans. It felt like there were a ton of UCLA fans, especially flying in from LA. There was one couple in particular had their hair dyed blue and were just basically, I mean, like, they looked like Tobias Fuge auditioning for the Blue Man Group, basically. So it wasn't, I wouldn't say it's an even split, but it was pretty, it was cool to see a lot of different fans. I think I'm going to be, like, I don't have a team. I think I might be signing up to be a Texas Longhorns fan because I just love the old school basketball. I never grew up with it, right? So, like, what is so nostalgic for so many other people that are like, oh, it's so great to see post play in basketball again, was just never something that I was into at all. And now, you know, this offense, just they don't run anything that's not below the lower third of the court. And I just, it's fun. I don't know. I think I like it.
And you love burnt orange, and obviously Kirk Goldsberry got to you. And you're probably a McGonaghy fan too.
Yeah. You know, we have had a few Texas hires lately, so that's definitely part of it. Joel Anderson has converted me as well. So it's just, you know, I think a lot of things are converging at the same time. I started rewatching Friday Night Lights. Like, I don't know.
Texas forever.
Exactly.
Sarah, in terms of, you mentioned, you know, the growth and the popularity and things like that. Obviously, the live crowd experience was awesome. When you see the numbers come out and they're down for the women's tournament viewing, and they're down a little bit from the Caitlin Clark boom, but still up like double from where they were before the Caitlin Clark boom. What does that tell you about where we are with women's college basketball and the ability to sustain a good chunk of that extra interest that the last couple years brought?
Yeah, I think those numbers are probably to be expected, right? Like, I just think with the global phenomenon that Caitlin Clark was, with her graduating, going to the WNBA, there was obviously going to be somewhat of a drop-off, but it was cool to see just how many people it seems like were retained and maybe became fans of other teams as well. Like, you know, even thinking back to the Final Four, UConn and South Carolina were both involved in that. So a lot of people got a chance to watch that last year. Maybe there was some retention there. And I also think the fact that Juju Watkins was hurt and was unable to play, I wonder how much better the numbers would have been if they did end up making it to the Final Four. Obviously, they would have had to beat UConn to get there. So and Paige herself carries a huge fan base as well, so maybe it wouldn't have been quite as dramatic. But I do think overall the tournament lost some early juice and some momentum from not getting those numbers that I think probably would have carried over to the Final Four. And also the fact that, like, let's be real, the games themselves, they left a little bit to be desired because there just wasn't a lot of, like, there wasn't a lot of competition, which was surprising to me. This was the most competitive year of women's college basketball in quite a while, but UConn was just so much better than everybody else. It felt like a throwback in that way. So I do think that there were actually a couple of factors that made the numbers worse than they could have been, that, you know, aren't necessarily controllables, that make me a little bit more encouraged for the long term, because I don't think we're going to get getting blowouts like that in the future. I think this UConn team was just, they were just really good.
Yeah, I think it kind of like how the NBA likes it when, like, the Knicks, the Lakers, the Celtics are good because they're like huge franchises. Having UCLA and Texas in the Final Four was helpful to kind of counteract against some of that, because they're two huge institutions with massive fan bases in a rich history and heritage in sport.
And I just want to clarify, in case I didn't explain well, the numbers were down a little bit, but still way higher than they were prior.
I
want to make sure that's clear.
Also, I don't know, did they switch up the TV schedule this year? It felt like a lot of the games were competing on the same day as the men's games. I don't know if that messed things up.
Well, that's always happened. They've been one day off.
That's always been like that.
And then I guess the interesting thing is I really like the Sunday afternoon championship personally. But yeah, I don't know if that's in a prime time slot instead, if it's any different, but
I do too.
Yeah. Selfishly.
I like that too.
I think it's held over. I don't think there are too many changes.
Yeah. Okay. So Sierra, the big story, obviously UConn turns out to be very, very dominant. They come in as a two seed, then they turn in one of the best tournaments we've ever seen. We had a great chat with you about Paige Bueckers and what UConn needed from her and what was on the line for her heading into this tournament. And then you wrote a terrific piece at The Ringer about her coming out of this and, you know, the way she answered those questions, the way she bounced back from injury and things like that. How special of a tournament was that for Bueckers and for you to get the cover, kind of, you know, start to finish and see, you know, without blowing up your tires, you set the stage perfectly and then got the right, the like, well, here's the answer to all the questions we were asking. I imagine it was a pretty fun couple weeks covering her specifically.
It was. And I think with Paige in particular, and this UConn team in general, I think that they kind of share the same story, right? Like, she has dealt with so many injuries. The team itself in the last 5 years has dealt with so many injuries as well. You think about AZ Fudd, her ACL tear, and, you know, even Jayna Alfie coming in later this season as well. They just, it took them, I mean, in a lot of ways, it feels like it took them 5 years just to get healthy. Even when they were in the Final Four last year, they played a six-man rotation. It was a wonder that they even got there in the first place. They weren't supposed to. So I think the fact that they were healthy obviously makes them a better team. But I also think that through the course of her college career, Paige has had so many bad breaks that there was a genuine gratitude to just be in the moment and be fully ready to go and be able to play with all of her teammates for the last time. And I do think that that ability to stay in the moment really was to her benefit, because we talked about her game and how sometimes it's to her detriment how intelligent she is. She can see everything happening on the court before it materializes. But sometimes she also overthinks, and she either overpasses or she just gets out of the play. She's also a very unselfish player, which I definitely think as a leader has been to UConn's benefit. But she really sort of figured out, okay, I don't have to always be thinking score or pass, because I think that was kind of going into the season how she was thinking, like, okay, I need to shoot more. And I think she really just found a way to say, actually, I just need to do what the game demands. And that means just being really, really present and being able to analyze it in the moment and trusting myself, trusting my gut. And I think that she really managed to pull that off, which sets her up really well going into the WNBA. I think she kind of made the last evolution that she needed to make as a player to get in that. And I think a lot of it just came from confidence, too. I think she's kind of come full circle that actually my unselfishness makes me the player that I am. So long as that I'm making the right decisions, that's fine. And so long as I'm involved somehow, that's fine.
So she was also flanked by a very, very good team in general. Mm-hmm. But Sarah Strong turned in maybe the best tournament ever from a freshman, coming off of a very strong season overall, where she shot almost 60% from the floor, put up huge numbers. We have joked on this show with you, Sarah, about the tempo gearing up for Juju Watkins in that draft. Should we be setting the sights like 1 year later and be like, hey, expansion team, maybe they won't be that great, but Sarah Strong, 2028, I think it is. Is that where our eyes should be turning with the tempo lens?
I am right there with you, because at this point, it's not just Sarah Strong, who was incredible in her own right, but even on the South Carolina side, you saw Joyce Edwards as another freshman, Michaela Blake's another freshman. This 2028 class is shaping out to be pretty damn good. And then, hey, if Juju decides to take a redshirt year, maybe she would be in the 2028 draft too. So there's a lot of, we might have to push back things a little bit. We might need a 2-year tank just to really set the foundation here, because I'm not going to lie, Blake, I already started dreaming about it. I started dreaming about Juju year one and Sarah Strong year two. Now you're set for life.
So we're talking WNBA draft stuff, and these are all players that we can watch playing college here, but someone a little more mysterious, Dominique Malanga,
yeah,
AKA the female Wembanyama. What's the deal with her?
I mean, Dominique is whatever you want her to be in your imagination right now. She is a 19-year-old, 6'6" basketball player who has fluidity, footwork, athleticism like we have never seen before at that height. She has a 7'1" wingspan. She can handle the ball.
7'1" wingspan?
7'1" wingspan, yeah. She erases plays. She really does remind me of Victor Wembanyama in the way that she is able to warp the court. And really makes opponents rethink their decision-making, because they have simply never dealt with this geometry before. She's a fantastic prospect. She's also only 19 years old, because she's an international player, whereas the domestic players, because of the eligibility rules, don't come out until they're about 22. And now with this draft in particular, because all the COVID years and stuff, we got some 24-year-olds, 25-year-olds in this draft. But Dominique Malanga, I think, likely is going with the number 2 pick, has the potential to end up being the best player in this draft. But definitely, obviously, a raw, more high-variance pick. But honest, truly could be anything. Like, you could be talking about the players that she gets compared to beyond Wembanyama. I think maybe a more realistic thing would be like a Jaren Jackson type of player. But she's got about the highest ceiling that we have seen from a prospect in a very long time.
Is she skilled like Wembanyama?
She's got the skills. She has really good touch. The 3-pointer is not quite there yet. She's shooting about 30% from 3, but it has improved through the course of the years. And I think when you see her shot mechanics, her fluidity, her touch, it all pretends to eventually making a player who has all of those things. Kind of like Wembanyama, like we didn't really see the 3-pointer come along so much when he was in France, but there was absolutely no reason to try to limit him into just what he's good at. But with Dominique, I think it's the same thing. She's got a nice, like, lefty fader that she likes to go to in the post. I think maybe if you watch her, you think, okay, like, I would actually like to see you go more into contact. There's definitely things with your game that can use some polish. But again, 19 years old, so I personally see a lot of that stuff coming along, just based on what we've seen from players like her in the past.
Sierra, we only have like 2.5 minutes left with you. I know you've done basically a whole podcast on this, but quick version. We thought Olivia Miles from Notre Dame was going to be the presumptive number two pick in the draft. She instead enters the transfer portal, goes to TCU. We've seen a couple other top names hit the transfer portal as well. The decision to not enter this particular draft for a couple of players who figured to be drafted high, how much does that have to do with, the NIL era changes the accounting on that, but also a new CBA coming for 2026 where maybe life for a rookie could look a little different a year from now?
I think you nailed it. I think it's a perfect storm. There's also the matter of COVID eligibility as well. A lot of players did have fifth years that they could use to, you know, just have a little bit more flexibility in their college career, stay a little bit longer if they wanted to. So that's coming to an end as well. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely something the WNBA should be watching. I think that as negotiations continue and, like, the players' union as well, I'm not sure how much they're going to emphasize rookie skill salaries going up, but just there is so much money being poured in, like, through the NIL, through revenue sharing, through boosters. Like, it just feels like it's becoming a bigger and bigger business. So, if you're Olivia Miles this year in particular, I'm sure I don't know what she got. I'm sure it was more than the $70,000 that she would be making in the WNBA. And I do think for a long time it was a bit of a misnomer that that the players would make more in the WNBA, or that they would make more in college than they would in the WNBA. But I do think because of the situation that we're in right now, this is sort of a one-year exception, and hopefully the new CBA changes it. But it does. It's not ringing the alarm bells for me from the W, but it is definitely something to be monitoring.
Yeah, it's also such an interesting thing because then when you get into CBA negotiations, the people who make up the union are not future college players coming out, so you maybe don't care as much about the rookies. If I'm a 5-year vet, I'm not really worried about the rookie scale as much anymore, other than, I guess, out of the goodness of my heart.
We had a radio show transfer portal.
Yeah, where you? Well, I mean, I go to a Jay show on Tuesday. I am transferring in three shows.
Yeah, but you could be like, I'm entering the portal.
I'm going to do Kipper and Bourne now. I'm Nick Kiprios now.
Yeah, well, I don't know.
We'll figure that. We'll brainstorm this.
One of you is always welcome to join the Ringer WNBA show and talk to women too, if you ever want to do as well. So,
Sierra, you might be out.
I'm throwing that into the mix.
You might be out if
my
Blake
NIL
enters
bag
the portal.
Is not quite as big as TCU's though.
Yeah, no, I'm. We wouldn't be able to bump Sierra. We would maybe fill in for like 2 minutes on that. We'd be like the guy who just hops in for like ad libs like once in a while.
What do you mean we? I'm talking about you.
No, you're just trying to get rid of me.
Shot.
Okay. Sierra, we got to let you go here. Thanks so much for doing this. Congrats on a great women's season, and enjoy the WNBA draft next week.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks, Sierra.
Sierra Tsohi, the Ringer WNBA show, which apparently I'm going to co-host next year because Matt doesn't want me
back. If you enter the
back.
Portal, you never know.
I mean, I literally enter the portal Tuesday. I go over to the – I start doing a Jay show instead of a Raptor show. So
take off one hat, put on another.
Yeah. Time for Fast Break. Brought to you by BetMGM, the sportsbook born in Vegas. Taking a look at Wolves at Grizzlies tonight at 9:30. Wolves are 2.5-point favorites, over-under set at 231.5. Taking a look at this one. Well, one that's not a huge slate of games tonight in terms of close ones. They're only 5 games overall. But take a look at this one because as we teed up with Dan there, the Western Conference standings are so close. The Grizzlies are currently in 6th, which would mean they avoid a play-in game, which if you're playing as poorly as the Grizzlies until the last 3 games, you'd probably love to avoid the play-in. The Wolves sit in 8th, but they're only a game back of the Grizzlies for 6th to avoid the play-in. And if you're the Wolves, you probably feel pretty good about your chances of beating one of Sacramento or Dallas, but you'd rather host that game or host the first game or avoid that altogether. So a lot on the line there for those two teams. And I mean, really all of those teams. It's going to make for a fun last couple days as the Lakers, the Nuggets, the Clippers, the Grizzlies, the Warriors, and the Timberwolves all jockey for position 3 through 8 there. And this is the first one in that. Sacramento-Dallas is locked in as the first play-in game in the Western Conference. But even that one, we don't know who's going to host it yet. Which if you have to win 2 straight games to get into the playoffs, I sure would like to host that first one. I'd like my chances a lot more if I'm lighting the beam versus if I have to go into Dallas. Although Dallas might be the exception where there's just going to be fire Nico chance all through a playoff game. By the way, on the Grizzly side, the Wolves haven't submitted an injury report yet. But on the Grizzly side, Brendan Clark and Zion Pullen remain out. And then Jalen Wells is done for the season after that nasty fall the other day where he broke his wrist. But thankfully, nothing more there in terms of like concussion or neck or anything like that. That was a scary one. That was Fast Break brought to you by BetMGM, the sportsbook born in Vegas. Thanks to Dan Devine and Sierra Tsohi for joining us. Thanks to Amit Mann, Jake Schultz, and Jennifer Rolnick behind the glass. We will be back tomorrow to set up the last two Raptors games of the season. And as we touched on very, very briefly off the top, they don't matter. The Raptors are locked into the number 7 lottery odds. Wins and losses don't matter anymore.
Playing for fun.
And stats and, I don't know, pride, falafel, whatever. Yeah. That's a Mighty Ducks 2 reference. That
embracing the process of getting better night in and night out.
Jared Rohn, 30 piece. Coming in one of these.
Wouldn't surprise
me. I'd love to see it. And we'll see who gets that last roster spot on Sunday. Have a great Thursday, everyone. We'll talk to you tomorrow.